Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesa from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, Dorit Bat Sara, and Moshe Ben Miriam, and to Ilui Neshamot, which is elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Hasdai, Pesach Zeh, Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Haramir Kahana, Harab Benjamin Kahana, Tzipora, Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. This week we're going to discuss how the State of Israel came into being in 1948 and how there never would have been a Jewish state if we had had the type of unbelievably weak and cowardly leaders running Israel that we have today. And the leaders in Israel in 1948 were also terrible leaders, but because of the experiences of the Holocaust and everything that had happened, they resisted U.S. and international pressure. And that's the big difference between the leaders of then and the leaders of now. The leaders of Israel today never, never resist U.S. pressure, always give in to U.S. and international pressure. So there wouldn't have been a Jewish state in 1948 if Benjamin Netanyahu had been in charge, or if Naftali Bennett or Yosef Lapid had been in charge. There never would have been a Jewish state. But anyway, let's discuss what happened in 1948. In 1948, 3 years after the horrific Holocaust, in which over 6 million innocent Jewish men, women, and children were brutally murdered in the worst crime in human history, more than one-third of world Jewry, there were 17 million Jews in the world, over 6 million were murdered. And only 3 years later, you have 600,000 Jews in Israel, surrounded by 60 million Arabs who are promising to push them into the sea and perpetrate another Holocaust, and it looked like a hopeless situation. And the Jewish leaders didn't want to create a Jewish state, the Jewish establishment leaders, David Ben-Gurion, Chaim Weizmann. They weren't going to create a Jewish state in 1948. They were going to defer a decision because the Americans, the British, the world powers were insisting that there not be a Jewish state and were pressuring them not to do it, and they wanted to give in to the pressure, just like Israel almost always does when there's foreign pressure, unfortunately. But there were two underground freedom-fighting organizations called Etzel and Lehi. Etzel, sometimes known as Irgun, as the Irgun to American Jews, because Etzel is the acronym for Irgun Tzvai Leumi, the Jewish military organization. Etzel and then Lehi, another freedom-fighting organization. These two underground organizations were right-wing Jabotinsky Jews, and they demanded a Jewish state. And they made it clear that they would declare a Jewish state if the Jewish establishment leaders didn't, and that they would declare themselves as the leader of the new Jewish state if the Jewish establishment leaders refused to do what had to be done. The reason the Jewish establishment leaders didn't want to declare a Jewish state is frankly because the United States, under Harry Truman and Secretary of State Marshall, two anti-Semites, were demanding that the Jews not declare a Jewish state, not say that they're declaring independence and that a Jewish state comes into existence. The Americans and the British were pressuring Israel brutally not to have a Jewish state, to say, we're going to put off a Jewish state. We're going to allow the United States and Britain to come here under a trusteeship, because that was the proposal of Truman and Marshall. Under American-British joint trusteeship, the Americans and the British will occupy the land of Israel, and the Jews and the Arabs will live in the land of Israel under American and British occupation. That would have been such a catastrophe. There wouldn't have been a Jewish state, a Jewish homeland, if that had happened. And by the way, Harry Truman, who is idolized by stupid, sick American Jews who never learn anything from history and always have to kiss the tuchus of all of their worst Jew-hating enemies. Harry Truman, that vicious anti-Semite, who was, by the way, a vicious anti-Semite, who made many anti-Semitic remarks to many people, hated the Jews. He tried to prevent the Jewish state from coming into being. Now, true, after the Jewish state was declared, because he was running for re-election in 1948. 1948 was an election year. After the Jewish state was declared, Harry Truman did recognize, gave diplomatic recognition to the Jewish state, which the Jews were so thrilled with. Jews are always thrilled with things like diplomatic recognition and statements. They're more thrilled with that than concrete actions on the ground. This is the problem with Jews. They're a demented people. The Jews of modern times are demented. And we have to say this, because unless we cure this problem, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. We'll always have troubles. If we can cure this problem, if we can make the Jews a normal and sane people, we'll bring the final redemption. But right now the Jews are demented. They're so thrilled when Truman diplomatically recognized Israel. Did the diplomatic recognition of Israel by Truman help Israel in the 1948 War of Independence? Didn't help Israel at all. Didn't save a single Jewish life. Didn't liberate a single inch of Jewish land. Did nothing. But Jews are so anxious to be accepted and recognized by the Goyim. This is a Jewish obsession. No one represents that obsession more than that self-hating traitor, Benjamin Netanyahu. Shem Reshaim Yirkav, may the name of the wicked rot. Netanyahu is obsessed with getting the approval of the Goyim and diplomatic recognition and this agreement and that agreement, none of which benefit Israel. In fact, the agreements Netanyahu secures only hurt Israel. But anyway, that's something we'll discuss at another point. I don't know if we'll discuss it. I don't know if we'll have time to discuss it on this week's program, but we have discussed it in the past, how Netanyahu's agreements are only harmful. But the Jewish leaders had to decide. Ben-Gurion, Weizmann, and all the Jewish leaders had to decide, are they going to do the Haganah and the leadership of the Haganah and the Jewish Agency and all the Jewish establishment leaders had to decide, are they going to declare a Jewish state now that the UN, by the way, in November 1947, had declared a partition of Israel and gave the Jews the right to declare a Jewish state and said that the British rule was coming to an end. So the Jews could declare a Jewish state under the UN vote, which shouldn't have been relevant. The Jews shouldn't. Jews are so thrilled when the UN votes for them, or you know, the UN voted for to give them a tiny little sliver of land, and the Jews were so thrilled that the Goyim were willing to give them anything at all. This is part of the Jewish mental illness again. After 2,000 years of the Galut, the Jews are demented. Demented. And it's the same thing with Donald Trump when he moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The Jews were so thrilled, as if this has done anything to help the Jews. Has this brought a single Jew, allowed a single Jew to build a home in Jerusalem, or done anything to improve Israel's situation in Jerusalem? Nothing at all. It did nothing. They're still demanding that Israel give up Jerusalem to create and make it the capital of a Palestinian state. That has not ended at all, and Trump himself made that part of his plan, his so-called peace plan. But the Jews are so excited whenever any Goy says, "Ooh, I'm moving the embassy to Jerusalem," or "I'm recognizing Israeli rights in the Golan Heights." Big deal. It meant nothing. It never has meant anything. In fact, it's actually harmful, because it gives the Jews a false sense of security that they've achieved something and accomplished something and now don't have to do anything on the ground to change reality. While their enemies are acting on the ground, their enemies are doing things against them, and the Jews are just saying, "Oh, well, we have diplomatic immunity now. It doesn't matter. Oh, we have diplomatic recognition now. It doesn't matter." Now, the Jewish leaders had to meet and decide, are they going to create a Jewish state or not? Are they going to declare a Jewish state or not in 1948? And again, Truman and Marshall were pressuring them to accept an American-British joint trusteeship, where the Americans and the British would be occupying the land of Israel, and the Jews and the Arabs would live under American and British occupation, and the Arab population would continue to grow exponentially because the British and the Americans would allow the Arabs to come in from all over the Arab world, as the British were already encouraging the Arabs to do so. And so Israel would have been overwhelmed with many millions of Arabs, and there never would have been a Jewish state. And there was a huge Arab population. The huge Arab birth rate at that time. It was gigantic. Enormous Arab birth rate. The average Arab woman was having 8 or 9 children. And the average Jew at that time, the average Jewish woman at that time, was only having two or three children. There was no way there was going to be a Jewish state under those circumstances, unless Israel acted immediately. And so, because Etzel and Lehi, the two Jewish underground right-wing freedom-fighting organizations, were saying, we're going to declare a Jewish state if you and the Jewish establishment don't do so, and because of that pressure, and because they were afraid that the Jewish establishment was afraid they were going to lose control of the Jewish people and the support of the Jewish people, they decided to declare a Jewish state despite American pressure. They resisted American and British pressure. They resisted international pressure. They resisted and refused to give in to the pressure and declared a Jewish state. And so they defied Harry Truman and they defied Bevin and Churchill and the British leaders. The Jew-hating British leaders, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, they defied them. And so a Jewish state was declared. On May 15th, 1948, the Jewish state, the British leave the land of Israel, and the Jewish state of Israel comes into being. May 15th, 1948. That same day, on the very same day, seven Arab armies, representing tens of millions of Arabs in the Arab world, invade the tiny Jewish state to destroy the Jewish state. And after the Holocaust and after the incredible weakness that the world saw during the Holocaust, everybody was convinced that this is it, that the Jews are, they're not going to be able to defend themselves. Look what happened in Europe. The Jews don't know how to fight back. The Jews don't know how to defend themselves. After 2,000 years, they don't know how to do anything. That's the reputation the Jews had for 2,000 years, living in the Galut, living in the exile. It's one of the disgraces of the exile. It's one of the examples of Chilul Hashem, of the desecration of God's name that existed in the Holocaust, during the Holocaust and throughout the 2,000 years of Jewish exile. But in fact, when the Jews returned to the land of Israel, something happened. Suddenly the Jews became fighters again, and mighty warriors again. It's as if the land of Israel transformed the Jewish people into what they were in ancient times, mighty warriors once again. And the tiny Israeli army and this 600,000 Jews, their tiny Jewish state, ended up defeating the seven Arab armies that invaded. It took months, and they were outnumbered 100-1, but they defeated the Arab armies and threw them out and created a Jewish state. Now, what would have happened if Israel had given in to the U.S. pressure, as Netanyahu and Bennett and all the Jewish leaders in Israel do today? For instance, Israel faces now the danger of an Iranian nuclear holocaust. Literally the danger of a nuclear holocaust. And I'm not the only one saying this. Netanyahu has said this. And all the Jewish leaders in Israel have said there's a real danger of this if Iran gets nuclear weapons, and everybody agrees they're close to getting it. And yet Israel, which has the military capability to destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program before Iran builds the nuclear bombs, Israel can take out that program and destroy them and set them back 10 years. And if they do, with Iran's disastrous economy, they wouldn't be able to start all over again and spend hundreds of billions of dollars to build a new nuclear program. It would be very difficult for them to do. So Israel can solve the problem militarily. But Israel won't do it because the United States says no. They'll make Joe Biden angry, as if Joe Biden even knows where Iran is. Joe Biden doesn't even know that he's president. Joe Biden doesn't know what time it is. He doesn't know what city he's in. He's completely senile. But anyway, they might make Joe Biden angry, and they might make Kamala Harris and her self-hating Jewish husband angry, and the Americans won't like it. If we dish this, so Netanyahu did not, all his speeches, hundreds of speeches about the Iranian nuclear threat, and never took military action against them, even though Israel was very capable of doing it, because of his cowardice and the cowardice of all the Mossad and the Israeli army and the Israeli air force and all the Israeli leaders. They are cowards. They always cave in to foreign pressure, and so they're willing to face the danger of a nuclear holocaust, just so that they don't upset the Americans. This is the insanity we have. This is the insanity we have. By the way, when you give in to American pressure and do that, you only encourage more American pressure. If Israel resisted, there'd be less American pressure because they'd see it doesn't do them out. These people, it's hopeless. We could pressure them, but they don't give in. They're stubborn. When you give in, you're encouraging them to pressure you even more in every area. The more you give in to pressure, the worse it is. Always. It never is beneficial to capitulate to foreign pressure and foreign blackmail. But if we had had a situation where Netanyahu was prime minister at that time, there wouldn't have been a Jewish state. Netanyahu has never said no to U.S. pressure. He just doesn't do it. He always caves in. Ariel Sharon, when he was prime minister, actually said openly that we cannot say no to the United States. If the United States pressures us, we have to do whatever they tell us to do. He openly said so. Ariel Sharon, the big super right winger, and he was considered to be an extreme right winger by the insane Jews of our demented generation. He's the one who destroyed Gush Katif and destroyed 40 flourishing Jewish communities, expelled 10,000 Jews from their homes and handed over Gush Katif to the Hamas terrorists. Some right winger. Anyway, let's understand a simple rule here. There's an important rule we have to understand. If we followed this rule, we could bring the final redemption to the Jewish people. It says in the Torah, Hen am levadad yishkon, uvagoyim lo yitchashav. Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. Israel is supposed to dwell alone. It's a blessing when Israel dwells alone. Why? Because when Israel has the support of Donald Trump and this support of this one and that one, supposedly, Israel doesn't have the support of any of these people. This is all an illusion. But when there's this illusion of support of U.S. foreign aid, and they recognize in the Golan, and they move the embassy to Jerusalem, oh, we're so happy now. When these illusions exist, the Jews and the nations of the world believe it's not God, it's not a miracle that Israel exists. It's because of Donald Trump moving the embassy to Jerusalem. That's why Israel exists. So it's because of U.S. foreign aid that Israel exists. If not for U.S. foreign aid, Israel couldn't exist. This is what the demented Jews of our generation, the faithless, demented Jews of our generation believe. And so that's a chilul Hashem, it's a desecration of God's name. If Israel didn't get foreign aid, and if Israel didn't worry about where the embassy is and all these other nonsensical things and just did what had to be done to survive, destroy Iran's nuclear reactor, get the Arab enemy out of Israel, take the lands that you have to take for Israel's survival, and make sure that you settle Jews all over the land, just like the Hilltop Youth heroes are doing. If Israel did that and pursued that policy, and didn't care about world pressure, and didn't care about what these New World Order leaders, like Donald Trump, who is a New World Order leader and a globalist, by the way, as much as all the others are. If Israel didn't care about all of this, and did what had to be done, that would bring the final redemption for the Jewish people. But when Israel turns to these other countries and begs them for treaties and recognition and diplomatic recognition, you know that Israel has been handing out huge amounts of money since Netanyahu started this policy to African countries, illiterate, ignorant African countries who with the flies on them are scratching their tuchus, half-naked African leaders scratching their tuchus because they have flies all over them. They're bitten by all the flies. And they come and they meet with Netanyahu and he gives them $50 million, $100 million to open an embassy and to try to get them to open embassies in Jerusalem or to try to get them not to vote against us in the UN. As if voting in the UN, as if this is so, he's so worried about they're going to vote against us in the UN. Who the hell cares? Who cares what Zaire thinks of Israel or the Congo? Netanyahu, you know how much money he's invested in these countries? Begging them to vote for us in the UN as if the votes in the UN do not affect Israel or her survival. Complete nonsense. Now, the so-called treaties that Netanyahu has created with the United Arab Emirates, he and Trump, and Morocco, and then before then Egypt and Jordan, all of them disastrous. With Egypt, we gave away the whole Sinai. And then hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens from Africa came through the Sinai because of a surrender of Sinai and came into Israel, and now over 70% of South Tel Aviv are African illegal aliens, black rapists and murderers and drug dealers, the lowest scum of the earth. They've taken over whole neighborhoods and giant sections of Israeli cities now. If Israel hadn't given up Sinai, that wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have been able to get through because the Israeli army would have been in the Sinai. Instead, Egypt, the country which we supposedly have a treaty with, deliberately encouraged them to go into Israel, sent hundreds of thousands of African illegal aliens across the Sinai into Israel. The Egyptians helped them do that because Israel surrendered Sinai to Egypt. This was the brilliant idea of Menachem Begin and the Likud, the phony right, which is worse than the left. And we have the same problem with all the other so-called treaties. All these treaties create the illusion that we have friends in the Arab world and they're Arab moderates. They will never accept the existence of a Jewish state. Never. They're going to accept the existence of a tiny Jewish state in the middle of the Arab world, in the middle of the Muslim world. They don't even accept the existence of the United States or European countries or any infidel country. They're going to accept the existence of a Jewish infidel state, infidel quote-unquote state, in the middle of the Middle East, in the middle of the Muslim world? Are you kidding me? They'll never accept it. Of course, they'd like to use Israel to defeat Iran because they're scared of Iran and her nuclear program now, and Iran's nuclear program now. They'd like to use Israel to destroy Iran's nuclear program, but they also want Israel to be destroyed. And they will buy up the Israeli economy with their trillions of petrodollars, God forbid. They'll buy up the Israeli economy and buy up Israeli companies just like they do in the United States and in Europe. Take control of the Israeli stock market and the Israeli economy, and Israel will face an unbelievable disaster. That's Netanyahu and Trump. That's what they represent. That's what giving into pressure leads to. What if we had followed a different route? What if we had followed the route of Morenu v'Rabbeinu Haramir David Kahana Zecher Tzaddik v'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, our great beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, and had decided to become a light unto the nations and a holy nation, nation of priests? Because when Israel goes it alone, and when Israel doesn't have foreign aid, and when Israel resists pressure from the world, and wins Six-Day Wars, and wins independence in 1948 against all odds, against everybody's expectations, miraculously, when that happens, it's a Kiddush Hashem, it's sanctifying God's name. The world sees that there's a God in this world, and God does what He promised to do for the Jewish people in the Bible. That's what the Jewish people are supposed to do. That would be fulfillment of Jewish destiny. That's why we support the Hilltop Youth. Because they're doing on the ground what Jews are supposed to do. They're saying, we don't care what Joe Biden says or Donald Trump. Donald Trump also pressured Israel to give up Judea and Samaria and create a Palestinian state, even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians. The Hilltop Youth, they create facts on the ground, and they're saying, we are returning to our land, and the world cannot tell us what to do or what not to do. And by the way, when I say the world, it's not as if 200 countries have all come and descended on Israel and said, you do this or else. You know, this is Jewish paranoia and Jewish hysteria and Jewish imagination that this is what happens. It's not the world. It's some pathetic administration in Washington that nobody fears. Nobody pays attention to what Joe Biden says, except for the leaders of Israel. They're the only ones who tremble when Joe Biden speaks. They tremble, and Joe Biden's advisors tremble because they never know what he's going to say because he's, you know, because he's has dementia. So this is, you know, this is why it is so important that we support the Hilltop Youth. This is why it's so important that we do what a chosen people and a light unto the nations and a holy nation is supposed to do. the Hilltop Youth, they're the Jews of our generation who are doing what Jews are supposed to do. And eventually, Jews like that will inspire the Jews to wake up, because the prophets in the Bible promise us that something will happen and the Jews will, in the end, wake up. The Jews will turn around and wake up in the end. Not the Jewish leaders, not the traitors, but the average, among the average Jews, millions of Jews will wake up. And then the whole situation in the world will turn around. We may not live to see it. I don't know what it's going to take, but eventually, someday, that's going to happen. In the meantime, the seeds for that are being planted by the Hilltop Youth. And that's why JTF's the only organization in the world financing the Hilltop Youth. Can you believe this? But that's why JTF is doing what it's doing. And that's why it's so important that you participate and become a part of this, become a part of history and of bringing redemption to Israel, to the Jews, to the world. If you want to help the Hilltop Youth, there are two ways to do it. One is on PayPal. It's actually a PayPal account, but it's actually going to our Hebrew account, which is hayamin.org. And on our Hebrew account, hayamin.org, there's a donate button in English, even though most of our main page, our Hebrew main page, is in Hebrew, obviously. But the donate button, there is a donate button on top in English. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can very easily and conveniently donate, and donate generously to the Hilltop Youth. And of course, every donation makes a big difference. If you prefer to do it through the regular mail instead of doing it online, you can just send your checks and money orders to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. You can make the check out to JTF, or if you want a tax exempt, if you want it to be tax exempt, you make it out to VJA. VJA is for Voice of Jewish Activism, VJA. And again, you send it to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. Okay, let's now go and answer the questions of our great JTFers, if we can, Bezrat Hashem, God willing. And we start out with the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks great questions. Hirvatsky writes, and I quote, "What is the explicit name of God? There is a disagreement between Rambam, Laws of the Worship of Stars and Idols, 2-7, Rama, Tractate Sanhedrin 60, and Ritva, Tractate Shvuot 36a. Okay. I'm seeing this for the first time, Hirvatsky. The truth is, Hirvatsky, a name for God is just how we characterize God, or how God would be characterized in the world. The real truth, where there is no machloket, there's no disagreement, is that it's actually impossible to characterize God or to give him a true name. It's really almost impossible to do, because how do you define something that is infinite and all-powerful? We in our finite minds can't really do so. But God himself, we see in the Torah, mentions his name and speaks of his name. And the question of what the explicit name of God is, of course, there is one name of God in Hebrew that we are not allowed to utter. We're absolutely not allowed to utter it. It's the letters Yud K Vav K, and I'm not saying the letters. I'm saying the letters through a code, because we're not even allowed to say the letters. But it's what we say in Hebrew, Yud K Vav K, which is the explicit name that we give in on Yom Kippur in the Holy Temple, when Beit HaMikdash is built again, and when we have Beit HaMikdash, then the Kohanim, Kohanim are priests in Beit HaMikdash, and we return to that great period, then that'll be a different situation. But right now we are not allowed to utter this particular name, Yud K Vav K. There are other opinions and views that God's name, and that some of them are very, very long. There's one view that God has a very, very long name. So it's a complicated story. Now, God has many names that he's known by because he manifests himself to us in many different ways. We can never see God in his essence. It's impossible. Because we're finite and he's infinite, we couldn't absorb, we couldn't possibly see God. And we can't grasp fully what God represents because of his infinite, because of the infinite nature of God, which we can't possibly fully comprehend it. And so the only thing we do see are manifestations of God called the Shekhinah. Shekhinah means how he manifests himself through his actions in the world. Sometimes he does it, when the Jews were in Sinai, through a cloud, ananim, clouds that he had over the Jews, and then a ball of fire at night and clouds during the day. And all types of manifestations that God does. And we'll see those manifestations miraculously, of course, if we return to God. Right now we're not worthy. That's why we're not seeing that. We're not seeing those open miracles now that we saw in years past, because we're just not worthy. But we're going to be worthy again eventually. Eventually that's going to happen, and then we'll see. And then we will be able to know more about the name of God and more about His and have a greater understanding of what our comprehension of God should be in this world, again in our own limited way. But you know, the one thing we're going to be thirsting for in the next world is getting as close to God as possible and comprehending God as much as possible. Getting as close as possible and comprehending God as possible, we'll be overwhelmed when we finally realize who God is and everything He represents. We're going to be overwhelmed with love for God and just want to do everything to serve Him. We're going to be filled with just desire. It's like if you love somebody, you just want to do everything for that person. And that's nothing compared to the love we're going to feel for God. We're going to want to do everything to serve God and to please God. And that's going to be one of the great and wonderful experiences that we will have in the world of eternity, in the next world. Be'ezrat Hashem, b'mehera v'yameinu, amen, ken yehi ratzon. Thank you very much, Hirvatsky. And now we go to our friend Yimach Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, have you ever experienced encountering a hood rat?" Unquote. Of course, I've seen rats in New York City. I've seen rats many, many times. Many, many times. Large rats. I live in New York City. And yes, I've certainly seen a lot of mice also. But unfortunately, there are people who do things that create a rodent menace in the city. Of course, there's certain neighborhoods like Harlem and Bedford-Stuyvesant and South Jamaica and the South Bronx where there's a far greater number of rats because people throw food and garbage all over the streets, and it's just horrible how nasty people are and how they don't care about what they're doing to people's communities or neighborhoods or blocks. They don't care. They're just savages. And so in those areas, there are a much greater number of rats. But on numerous occasions in my lifetime, I've seen rodents, yes. Thank you, Yimach Shmoda Islam. And now we go to our friend Ram 770. And Ram asks us in Hebrew, Shalom Chaim, Hatzadik, Mashlomcha, Dibarti im Pe'ilat Hayamin, Shekorim La Yehudit Fesel. Okay, anyway, I'm not going to read all of this because this is about, Ram is writing to me about me getting interviews with people, and of course I'm more than happy to do so, and I'm going to answer him. And he also says that he has that we should also pray for his refuah shlema, which we will. And Ram has been very, very helpful to us. In fact, tomorrow I'm supposed to do another Zoom with another Hebrew Zoom with Ram and the people and his friends in Israel. So that's something I look forward to. Ram, ani me'od rotze kamuvan lasot et ha-Zoom shelanu machar. Ani mekaveh sheze yeh שאני מקווה שזה יצליח, ואני מצפה שזה יצליח, כי כשאתה מעורב במשהו, בדרך כלל זה יצליח. וכמובן שאני מוכן לעשות רעיונות עם פעילת הימין הזאת, אם זה יכול לקדם את העניין שלנו, למה לא? וכמובן שאני מאחל לך רפואה שלמה, מצטער שיש לך כאב גרון, מקווה שזה יעבור ושאתה תהיה בריא ושלם שוב, רם. שוב אני מודה לך. And now we go to our friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, and Binyamin is writing again about gay pride and the Happy Pride Month, and there is some interesting information he writes here, which I urge people to read if they want to read it. It's somewhat of a long question, so and Binyamin asked me about a lot of people here, so all I can say is, I urge people to read Binyamin's question. It's about the Office of LGBT Affairs in Philadelphia, and it was passed in a referendum to make it permanent. It was a disgrace, all disgraceful. And again, I've already said last week, I don't understand what they have to be proud of. I don't understand why people would be proud of living an abomination. Binyamin now writes, and I quote, discuss the following people, and that's Mayor Ras Jua Baraka of Newark. You only discussed his father. Well, aside from the fact that he's part of a black leadership that supports Farrakhan and supports Barack Hussein Osama and supports the destroying the Jewish people, what else can I say? Even his name, is a name which is supposed to be Islamic. They want to adopt Islam, a religion, which is a religion that actually is racist against blacks, and they actually hate black people and still enslave them to this day. So what else can I say? They're insane and disgusting. And Binyamin writes, now ask me about Jerome Powell, Alan Greenspan, Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, who are the present head of the Federal Reserve, the chair of the Federal Reserve, or the former chair. For the former chair people of the Federal Reserve. I think the Federal Reserve does a lot of harm. I think that their policies are harmful. I think that they distort the economy and the free market. And I think the Federal Reserve should be abolished. I don't think that government and banks should get together and have agencies which control the printing of money and the flow of money. I think it happens to be unconstitutional in addition to that. It's blatantly illegal. But since the courts allow it, blatantly illegal things are permitted in the United States, but I think what they've done is harmful to the economy, and I think we're paying a price now economically because of their terrible economic policies. And Binyamin asked me about Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is a complete phony. He was Speaker of the House, and I liked him for a while because he was saying there's no Palestinian people, but then I realized that that was all fake and phony, and it was fake and phony. He then soon again began calling on Israel to make concessions and so on and so forth when he was running for president. So he's a phony. Bob Dole is an anti-Semite. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Thank God that he's not with us anymore. He was always an anti-Semite, and would have been a terrible president, very anti-Semitic president. Jack Kemp, who was Bob Dole's running mate in 1996, actually was pro-Israel and was not an anti-Semite, but he was so pro-black. He actually was upset that Ed Koch even criticized Jesse Jackson. That's how pro-black he was. Or criticized Louis Farrakhan. He was so pro-black from his days as a football player, where he had very close relations with all the people that he was playing football with. A sick person. And I have a feeling that, despite the fact that he claimed to be pro-Israel and was always defending Israel, I have a feeling that as president he would be doing what Trump did. He would be pushing for a so-called peace plan that in the end would be disastrous. I think that's what eventually would have happened with him as well. And Prime Minister Amalek Lapid. Lapid is indeed Amalek. He's a Jewish anti-Semite. His father was a Jewish anti-Semite. His father spoke about religious Jews the way the Nazis used to speak about Jews. Vicious hater of Jew, religious Jews, good Jews, Jewish settlers, just vicious, hateful, low life. His father, by the way, compared the Israeli army to the army of, to the army of Nazi Germany, because he said they destroy, they harm the property and homes of Arabs, and it reminded him of the Holocaust. That's what his father said. That's what Lapid's father said. And Lapid's father, Tommy Lapid, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, was the inspiration for the son. Like father, like son. So, you know, he's a terrible prime minister, terrible leader. But one good thing is, because he's considered to be a leftist, there's a lot of resistance. If he tries to do something dramatic, like create a Palestinian state, there'll be a lot of resistance. Unlike if Netanyahu does it. So in many ways, Netanyahu is worse, because Netanyahu is more dangerous than him being from the phony right. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, our good friend Joe Gutfeld writes, Shalom Chaim, what do you think is the worst political scandal in the U.S.? Watergate, Bill Clinton sex scandal, Donald Trump January 6th, John Kennedy possibly killing Marilyn Monroe. Thanks. I don't know about John Kennedy. I don't know about Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe, and Bill Clinton's sex scandal was not the worst part of Bill. Bill Clinton did a lot worse than that. He and Hillary Clinton were involved in scandals that endangered American national security. They were involved with communist China and Russia, and did things that were very, very dangerous for U.S. national security. So the least of his scandals were his disgusting adulterous affairs. Of course, he raped Juanita Broderick. Bill Clinton was a rapist. But as far as the most dangerous, Watergate was a scandal involving Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, again, was a terrible president and did terrible things. But to me, the most amazing thing is Donald Trump and January 6th. I don't know if people really comprehend really what Donald Trump wanted to do, and January 6th is not the real issue here. What they wanted to do on January 6th, so the real issue here is that Donald Trump wanted to change the results of an election. In other words, he wanted to falsify the results of an election. He wanted to get electors to vote for him after he lost the election by over 7 million votes. That's the most dictatorial thing you could possibly do, and that's what Donald Trump intended to do. He lost the election by over 7 million votes, and he wanted to change the results of the election. He pressured election officials to change what the people, the will of the people, what the people had voted for. That's really serious business. It's insanity. But that's literally what Donald Trump wanted to do. And even his own vice president, Mike Pence, said, well, hey, wait a minute, I can't do this. He pressured Mike Pence to do that. Mike Pence said, I can't do this. And the election officials in Georgia and other places also refused to do it. And so Trump turned against them. And Trump, incited the crowd on January 6th. They were screaming, hang Mike Pence. And Trump thought that was a good idea. And I mean, I don't like Mike Pence. He's an establishment piece of garbage. But I don't like the election officials either. But still, the people voted a certain way, and Donald Trump wants to change the results and falsify the results. I think that's about as serious a scandal as you can get, in my opinion. And that is what he wanted to do. There's no doubt that that's what he wanted to do. Thank you, Joe. And now we're going to Roy, who is a friend of ours and who asks a question in Hebrew. Baruch haba shuv, Roy. Let me read quickly his two brief questions in Hebrew and respond and translate. Shalom Chaim Hayakar, ma shalomcha, ma datcha al gil ha'olam ve'torat ha'evolutzia benigud lema she'omrim harbe rabbanim. Okay, Roy wants to know what is my view of the age of the world and evolution, contrary to what many rabbis say. Roy, Harav Kook, he'emin be'evolutzia ve'lo ra'a shum stira bein אבולוציה לבין התורה. גם אני לא חושב שיש סתירה. אני לא יודע אם זה היה בדיוק כמו שדרווין ועוד אנשים אמרו שזה היה, אני לא יודע. אבל אני לא רואה את זה כאיום לאמונה היהודית, זה מגוחך. העולם, גילו של העולם הוא מיליארדי שנים. וגם זה לא שום סתירה. נכון שיש לנו לוח עברי, והשנה בלוח העברי זה פחות מ-6,000 שנה, אבל מה זאת אומרת? זה רק אומר שההיסטוריה המשמעותית התחילה לפני כמעט 6,000 שנה. זה מה שזה אומר. זה לא אומר שהעולם עצמו נברא לפני 6,000 שנה. זה מגוחך לומר דבר כזה. היה עולם לפני זה. אבל העולם לא היה מוכן למסר של הקדוש ברוך הוא. העולם רק היה בשל ומוכן למסר של הקדוש ברוך הוא לפני 6,000 שנה. What I said to Roy was that the world is billions of years old, and I don't see any contradiction between evolution and the Torah. And Harav Kook didn't see any contradiction between evolution and the Torah. And unlike the Haredim, I don't view this as some great threat to Jewish belief. Not at all. As far as the fact that the world is almost 6,000 years old, according to the Jewish calendar, the Jewish calendar does not say that the world is almost 6,000 years old. There is a Jewish calendar where almost 6,000 years ago, the world was prepared, finally prepared and ready to get the message of God. And so, important history, consequential history, really began almost 6,000 years ago, because before then the world was a barbaric place and was not ready to get, was not morally ready to get the message of God. And now Roy asks, and I quote in Hebrew and then I'll translate it, Haim yatsa lecha lehitamet im pe'ilei BDS b'New York בזמן הפגנות שלהם עם דגלי אש"ף, והאם קרה משהו מעניין באימות. And he asked me if I've ever had any confrontations with BDS people with their PLO flags and their demonstrations. לא, אני, רואי, אני לא חושב שזה באמת האיום. אני חושב שהאיום שלנו זה דווקא בתוך העם שלנו. יש לנו גייס חמישי, יש לנו מנהיגים שמובילים קו התאבדותי למדינה פלסטינית, לוויתורים ביהודה ושומרון, לנסיגה ביהודה ושומרון, שזה היה אסון איום ונורא. זה האיום לקיומנו. BDS וכל האנשים האלה, אם היינו עושים מה שצריך לעשות בתור עם, הם לא היו יכולים לאיים עלינו באופן משמעותי. And what I just told Roy, I don't think the BDS people know. I've not had confrontations with them, and I don't think the BDS people are the real problem here. And of course they're Jew haters and they're evil people, including the Jewish ones. But I don't think that they're the real problem. The real problem are our own leaders that want to create a so-called Palestinian state and give up Judea and Samaria. Those are the ones that are endangering our survival. That's what really endangers our survival. Ani modeh lecha, Roy. I thank you, Roy. And now we go to the great Naches, who is a great JTFer, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, to what would you attribute the fact that the majority of so-called right-wingers are not genuine Ted Cruz, Reagan-esque type principled constitutional conservatives and instead are mainly rhinos and fall into the phony establishment camp, unquote. Great question. I think the answer, it's insane, but I think the answer is because most people are just fools. What can I tell you? They could have had Ted Cruz and they pick a clown like Donald Trump, who's such an obvious egotistical phony. I think people are just fools. I don't know what else to say. They're fools. And Nachus writes, and I quote, please discuss the following individuals. Okay. Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley was a singer who brought a new type of music and popularized. He really rock and roll was beginning in the 50s, and he really helped popularize it tremendously. And he introduced a new type of music and singing style, and became a very important personality. In the end, look at him. He was so famous and so popular and so beloved. And yet, he ended up dying of a drug overdose because he was jealous of the Beatles. In the 60s, the Beatles became the big hit. He was in the 50s, and the Beatles were in the 60s. And because of that, he wound up going on drugs and becoming absolutely crazy over that, and dying of a drug overdose. Just an insane story. And by the way, I believe that his grandmother on his maternal side was Jewish. So Elvis Presley, halachically, was a Jew. And Dick Cavett. Dick Cavett's just a left-wing talk show host. Not an impressive person, in my opinion. A joke. Nechamia Persoff. Nechamia Persoff was a very famous actor. I think most people today wouldn't even know who he is. 99 out of 100 people would not know who he is. But he was a famous Jewish actor. He was born in the land of Israel before there was a Jewish state. His family left and came to the United States. And I think he was over 100 when he passed away. He was very talented. He acted not only in many movies, but he was also in many television series. I remember seeing him occasionally on television. Not that I'm not a television watcher, but I don't know why, but I just happened to see him acting in a couple of situations on television on the rare occasions when I did watch television, maybe in the 1960s when I was a kid. He was a very good actor. Beyond that, I don't know much about him. Nathan Sharansky. Nathan Sharansky is a Jewish traitor. Scum. When I was expelled from Israel by that pig Netanyahu in 1996, Sharansky was a government minister and part of the coalition, and Netanyahu needed Sharansky's support to keep his government afloat. And Sharansky refused to lift a finger for me. He knew that I was in Israel. He knew they were denying me access. He knew that they put me in prison. They were holding me at the airport and were ready to throw me out. And when my friends went to him and approached him, I no can help. He couldn't help. We did everything to free him and save him. He's a traitor. He's scum. And by the way, the things he does as the head of the Jewish agency, the things he does now, bringing in hundreds of thousands of Russian, anti-Semitic Russian Cossacks. We fought to bring Russian Jews into Israel, but not a bunch of Nazi Cossacks who have forged papers coming into Israel as they're doing now. Sharansky fights for the Cossacks to come into Israel. And he's just a vile person, an evil, vile person. A traitor. Shem Rashaim Yirkav. And now Art Bell. And Johnny Cash. Okay. Art Bell, I don't know. I think Art Bell was a little crazy. Art Bell's the one who had all the UFOs and people from outer space on his show. I think he was a little crazy. I think. I don't know. I don't know much about him. But he had the radio show. And Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash, a singer who was part American Indian. Beyond that, I don't know much about him. And Nachas writes, thanks and God bless. Thank you and God bless you, Nachas. You are really a great JTFer. You're a very good Jew. And now we go to our friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, what do you think of Isaac Bishevitz Singer? Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. Isaac Bashevitz Singer was a self-hating Jew who wrote in Yiddish. He was a leftist. He signed letters criticizing Israel. I mean, the wimpy Israeli policies, even that was too much for him. And he wasn't, and by the way, he wasn't he didn't believe in Zionism and didn't believe in a Jewish state. He wasn't thrilled with the whole Zionist movement and the idea of a Jewish state. He thought that everybody should just go around being Yiddish-speaking atheists, which he was, by the way. Atheist, agnostic, I don't know what you would call him, but he, even though he came from a Hasidic family, he left Judaism completely and basically mocked and ridiculed it. Misled many people and caused many people to sin and brainwash many people. He was a terrible person. Thank you, Kalman. And I want to thank everybody for another program of JTF that I very much enjoyed doing. Let's support the Hilltop Youth. Let's make a difference. Let's add meaning to our lives. If we work to change the world and make this a better world, then we really do have a purpose in life. A purpose in life. Excuse me. A purpose in life that makes life worth living. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.